Hi, I'm Reed. Before I continue, please like and subscribe. The divorce papers were supposed to be the end of my problems with Sarah. Instead, they were just the beginning. I pulled into the school parking lot, scanning the playground until I spotted Emma. My daughter's bright purple backpack bounced as she ran toward me, her smile lighting up everything around her. Some fathers might dread shared custody, but for me, these moments were everything. Dad, I aced my science project. Emma thrust a poster board covered in meticulously drawn diagrams of the solar system. I whistled, impressed. Planetary motion and orbital mechanics? Looks like you're going to be a rocket scientist. Her laugh was pure joy. Mom helped me with the research, and Marcus... She stopped mid-sentence, her excitement dimming slightly. That was the first sign something was off. Marcus had been in the picture for about 8 months, ever since Sarah met him through her real estate job. From day one, I'd felt something was wrong. Not overtly dangerous, but like a constant low-grade irritation. Our custody arrangement was supposed to be straightforward. Alternating weeks, shared holidays, frequent communication. But Marcus seemed to view Emma as an inconvenience rather than a child to be loved. At drop-offs, he'd stand just behind Sarah, arms crossed, watching with this calculating look that made my skin crawl. Never overtly hostile, but always present. Like a shadow trying to reshape the entire picture. "How's Marcus treating you?" I asked casually, knowing Emma would tell me the truth. She shrugged. "He's okay, I guess. He doesn't really talk to me much. Mostly he's on his phone or working." My sister Linda had warned me. "Be careful, Reed. Some people aren't built to be step-parents." Linda knew me better than anyone. A family law paralegal with a razor-sharp instinct for people's motivations, she'd been my rock through the entire divorce. While Sarah accused me of being too protective, Linda understood that my caution came from love, not control. The first real tension emerged during Emma's last birthday. Marcus suggested they take her to an adult-appropriate dinner instead of the science museum trip we'd planned for months. When I pushed back, Sarah mediated with that exhausted tone she always used, caught between keeping peace and managing competing demands. "Marcus means well," she'd said. "He's just trying to find his place in our family." But families aren't territories to be conquered. They're ecosystems of love, respect, and understanding. As we drove home, Emma plugged her phone into the car's speakers, filling the space with some pop song about friendship. I caught her looking at me, a mix of love and something else, a wariness that didn't belong in a 10-year-old's eyes. The weather forecast had warned about a severe thunderstorm for days. I'd spoken to Sarah twice about Emma's safety, making her promise they'd keep her inside if the storm hit during her week. It was nearly midnight when my phone rang. The caller ID showed Linda's number, but her voice was different, tight, controlled. "Reed, Emma's at the hospital." My world stopped. The details came out in fragments. Marcus had apparently locked Emma out of the house during the peak of the thunderstorm. Sarah was out of town on a real estate conference, leaving Marcus as the primary guardian. Neighbors had found Emma huddled against their fence, soaked and shivering, about 2 hours after the storm began. When I arrived at the hospital, Emma looked small and fragile. Her normally vibrant eyes were dull, her skin pale. Bruises from hail and wind-driven debris marked her arms. The doctor explained she had early signs of hypothermia and a mild respiratory infection. "What happened?" I demanded when Marcus and Sarah arrived. Marcus's story was calculated. "She wanted to go outside. I told her to come back in, but she's stubborn. When I looked again, she was gone." Emma's quiet sob told a different story. "That's not true," she whispered. "He locked the door. I was knocking. I was scared." Linda, who had arrived with me, was already taking notes. As a family law paralegal, she knew every possible angle. Her pen moved quickly across her notebook, capturing every detail. Sarah looked torn, caught between defending her partner and believing her daughter. "Marcus wouldn't..." "Check the security cameras," Emma interrupted. Her voice was small but determined. "I pressed the doorbell camera. It records everything." The next 48 hours became a whirlwind of evidence collection. The doorbell camera footage was damning. It showed Marcus deliberately locking the exterior door, watching Emma's desperate attempts to get back inside, and walking away. Local law enforcement was initially hesitant. "It's a family dispute," one officer suggested. Linda's professional network came into play. She contacted Child Protective Services, presenting a comprehensive file that included medical records, camera footage, and Emma's statement. Marcus's professional veneer began to crack. His real estate firm started asking questions. Colleagues whispered. The careful image he'd constructed was showing significant fractures. "He said I was being dramatic," Emma told me during a quiet moment in her hospital room. "He told Mom I make up stories." The trauma was clear in her eyes. This wasn't just about being locked out during a storm. This was a calculated attempt to minimize and isolate her. Sarah's relationship with Marcus was the first casualty. When confronted with the video evidence, her initial defensiveness crumbled. The man she thought she knew was systematically revealing himself as something else entirely. Linda's connections were working overtime. Child Protective Services launched a formal investigation. The preliminary report noted Marcus's deliberate endangerment of a minor. "This isn't just about one incident," Linda explained to me. "This is a pattern of psychological manipulation." Emma squeezed my hand. "I was so scared, Dad." I kissed her forehead. "You're safe now, and we're going to make sure nothing like this happens again." "More than just the thunderstorm incident," Linda explained during a strategy session at my apartment. Emma was staying with me, her usual cheerful demeanor replaced by a guardedness that broke my heart. Our first step was comprehensive documentation. Linda reached out to her network, school counselors, child psychologists, and legal contacts who specialized in family dynamics. Each conversation added another layer to our understanding of Marcus's manipulation. Emma's school guidance counselor, Ms. Rodriguez, provided a crucial piece of the puzzle. "There's been a pattern," she revealed during a confidential meeting. "Emma's been increasingly withdrawn. Her grades started dropping. She's been having panic attacks before weekends with her mother." The school had documented communications showing Marcus consistently undermining Emma's confidence. Emails suggested he'd complained about her neediness to the school administration, attempting to paint her as a problem child. We discovered Marcus had a history. Two previous relationships ended with accusations of emotional manipulation. His ex-partners had signed non-disclosure agreements, but Linda's investigative skills uncovered sealed court documents hinting at similar patterns of controlling behavior. "He's strategic," Linda warned. "This isn't random. It's calculated." Sarah began to see Marcus differently. Initial phone calls were defensive, but gradually her tone changed. The evidence was impossible to ignore. "I can't believe I didn't see it," she told me during one emotional conversation. "He was so careful, always saying the right things, making me doubt my own perceptions." We collected everything. Text messages showing Marcus's dismissive communication with Emma, social media posts revealing his narcissistic tendencies, professional recommendations from colleagues who described him as difficult and prone to extreme control. The breakthrough came from an unexpected source, Marcus's own professional network. A former colleague reached out anonymously, providing documentation of workplace complaints about his manipulative management style. "He destroys people systematically," the anonymous source shared, "always making it look like the other person is the problem." Emma started therapy with a trauma-informed counselor. Each session provided additional insights into Marcus's psychological manipulation. Her therapist's professional assessment became another critical piece of evidence. "This isn't about revenge," Linda explained. "This is about protection, about creating a record that prevents future harm." Sarah's transformation was remarkable. The woman who once defended Marcus now became our strongest ally. She shared additional documentation, admitting moments she'd previously dismissed as misunderstandings. "I kept making excuses," she admitted during one difficult conversation. "I didn't want to see the truth." Marcus's professional reputation began to crumble. His real estate firm started an internal investigation. Clients began pulling contracts. The carefully constructed image of a successful, stable professional was systematically dismantled. Emma watched the process with a mixture of fear and growing strength. "He can't hurt me anymore," she told me one evening, her voice quiet but resolute. The investigation wasn't just about legal consequences. It was about healing, about rebuilding trust, about showing Emma that she was heard, believed, and protected. As we compiled our final documentation, one thing became clear. Marcus's attempt to isolate and control had backfired spectacularly. Instead of breaking Emma, he'd united a family determined to expose the truth. The storm was far from over. The courtroom was packed, but silence hung like a heavy curtain. Marcus sat rigid, his perfectly pressed suit now a costume of desperation. Linda's presentation was surgical. Each piece of evidence cut through Marcus's fabricated narratives, the security camera footage, school counselor reports, workplace testimonies. By the time she finished, Marcus looked like a deflated balloon. The judge's ruling was decisive. Marcus was served with multiple legal consequences, a permanent restraining order, mandatory psychological evaluation, and supervised visitation restrictions with any potential future children. His professional licenses were under review, with the real estate board conducting a comprehensive investigation. Sarah sat beside me, her transformation complete. No longer defensive, she'd become a fierce advocate for Emma's safety. "I'm sorry," she whispered to Emma during a court recess. "I should have seen it sooner." Emma's response was measured beyond her years. "I know, Mom." The social fallout was immediate and extensive. Marcus's professional network evaporated. Former colleagues and clients distanced themselves. His carefully constructed reputation crumbled like a house of cards. Linda explained the broader implications. "This isn't just about legal punishment. It's about creating a documented pattern that protects others." Emma's therapy continued, focusing on healing and rebuilding her sense of security. The therapist noted her remarkable resilience, how she was transforming trauma into strength. "I want to help other kids who might be going through something similar," Emma told me one evening. Her determination was breathtaking. The final confrontation came unexpectedly. Marcus attempted one last manipulation, a desperate email to Sarah suggesting he was the victim. Emma intercepted it. "Dad, look," she said, handing me her phone. Her hands were steady. I read the email, a pathetic attempt to twist narratives to paint himself as misunderstood. But the words rang hollow now. We had documentation. We had truth. "What do you want to do?" I asked Emma. She thought for a moment. "Nothing. He doesn't deserve our energy anymore." That was the true victory, not revenge, but complete emotional independence. Our family dynamics transformed. Sarah and I found a co-parenting rhythm built on mutual respect and Emma's well-being. Linda remained our strategic advisor, a guardian angel with legal expertise. "You've broken a cycle," Linda told me quietly, "not just for Emma, but potentially for others who might encounter someone like Marcus." Emma's science project, the one about planetary motion, now sat in a place of honor in my home. A reminder that even in the most chaotic systems, there's an underlying order. That with persistence, observation, and support, justice finds its way. As for Marcus, he became a cautionary tale. A reminder that manipulation has consequences, that children are not pawns, and that truth eventually emerges. Emma looked at me one night, her eyes clear and bright. "I'm okay, Dad, really okay." And in that moment, I knew we had won more than a legal battle. We had reclaimed our peace. The storm had passed, and we were still standing. Have you been in a situation where someone close to you deliberately tried to harm or manipulate a child in your life? How did you protect them, and what consequences did the manipulator face? Our story about Reed, Emma, and Marcus shows the power of family unity and strategic exposure of toxic behavior. If you've experienced something similar, share your story in the comments below.